Let's continue on with more Ronettes there. Ronnie Spector, Phil Spector produced Be My Baby. Great review there of the HBO movie coming up. How you doing, everyone? I'm Andy Klein, and I'm your host for today's edition of a Juno afternoon on this beautiful Bluebird Thursday. A little bit windier than it was yesterday. People have been spotting orcas in the channel all day today. I don't know if they're still out there, but a little bit earlier today, people were saying they were swimming underneath the bridge. So if you're by there, maybe park on the side of the road or by the Breezin parking lot or over by the Department of Fish and Game building and see if you can see some orcas. The forecast is for partly cloudy skies for the rest of today and into tonight, with lows in the single digits tonight, 7 degrees to 15 degrees tonight, increasing clouds tomorrow, highs getting a little bit warmer around 30 degrees, and then mostly cloudy with a chance of snow for Friday night, lows 21 degrees to 27 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies, chance of snow for Saturday, and mostly cloudy, chance of snow for Saturday night. And that is the forecast for Sunday as well. Sunday getting even a little warmer with highs around 39 degrees. Great show for you today here on a Juno afternoon, including a discussion about powder chicks, which is going to be examining gender construction and the risk in extreme skiing. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Charlene Weaving tonight, and she's got a presentation out at UAS at the Egan Lecture Hall tonight. Also, the ACLU in Alaska, Jeffrey Mittman is here to talk to us about their Saturday gatherings that they have. The Juno Fine Arts Camp is coming up June 3rd through the 28th, and you can start signing up for that. M.K. McNaughton will be here to talk to us about that. We'll get a call from Tracy Helming, who is going to be in as part of Juno Jazz and Classics annual string workshop. So that'll be a great phone call we'll be able to have with her. And then we'll be talking to Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council about all the things that are happening this weekend. And that's part of Arts Up. Right now we're going to hear first from National Native News, and we'll be back to talk about powder chicks.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Prime Minister has named a representative to help ease tensions between First Nations and the energy and pipeline sector. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, tensions threaten the government's plan to fast-track development of the country's natural resources.
The big stumbling block, First Nations concerns about the troubled Northern Gateway pipeline. It would carry Alberta oil to the West Coast and then be hauled by tankers to hungry markets in Asia. But the proposed pipeline would cross dozens of First Nations lands, and many of them fear an oil spill or accident could cause environmental damage. They also complain about their rights, treaties, and sharing of natural resource wealth. To address issues between the oil patch and the First Nations, Prime Minister Stephen Harper has named Vancouver lawyer Doug Iford as his special envoy. Iford says his role is not to take one side or another.
I've not been retained to become an advocate for any specific project. My role is to ensure that the Government of Canada is in receipt of the perspectives of the First Nations communities in this province.
Iford will address environmental concerns. He will also look for ways to create more economic and job opportunities for First Nations communities. Iford won't be getting involved in the regulatory hearings on the pipeline, but he will be trying to encourage and stimulate discussions between Native groups and the industry. Critics say his appointment would not have been necessary if Harper had listened to Aboriginal groups in the first place before opposition to the Northern Gateway pipeline boiled over. Iford will report directly to the Prime Minister and deliver his final report in November. That report will not be made public. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A special assistant has been appointed by the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota to help women on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Jim Kent reports.
Erin Shanley is a Cheyenne River Sioux tribal member and an assistant prosecutor on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Her additional position as the U.S. Attorney's special assistant on that reservation is funded by a grant from the Justice Department's Office on Violence Against Women. Shanley says her job includes prosecuting cases involving domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking committed within the reservation's boundaries.
Basically, the goal of my position as a CREST designated prosecutor is to work with the federal government and the tribal government to improve the investigation and the prosecution of domestic violence cases here on the reservation, and also to partner with domestic violence advocates and others who work in the system to help assist the victims of domestic violence to have more of a voice and participate in the criminal justice process.
Shanley says the U.S. Attorney's Office is doing its best to address the alarming rate of violence against women on the Standing Rock Sioux and other reservations. Native American women can help by reporting the crime. Since the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation buffers the border of North and South Dakota, Shanley is authorized to pursue domestic violence cases in both states within the reservation's boundaries. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The funeral for a Native American man who jumped in the Big Sioux River to rescue a 6-year-old boy are planned for Saturday in Rapid City, South Dakota. The little boy made it out safely, but Lyle Eagletail and the boy's teenage sister lost their lives last week attempting to save him. Caroline Quickbear, a relative of Eagletail, says they're grieving his loss, but his heroic actions are of no surprise.
He really had a lot of care and concern for children, I think, because of the way he was raised. I think that's why he never thought. He just jumped in there to help the little boy.
A memorial fund for Eagletail's family has been set up at Wells Fargo Bank. During this month in 1861, Mohawk poet Emily Pauline Johnson was born on the Six Nations Reserve in Canada. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Why UAS alumni?
UAS environmental science degree allowed me to freely study a science of interest, which was snowpack and avalanche science, which led me into helicopter ski guiding and eventually into guiding film production companies in the Big Mountains in Alaska.
Kent Sheeler, lead guide, Teton Gravity Research, Bachelor of Science, Environmental Science, University of Alaska Southeast. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/y-alumni.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon on this beautiful Thursday. A little windy, a little cold out there. Weather's going to start getting a little bit warmer as a front moves in, and we're going to start getting mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow coming in. Powder Chicks is the top headline of talk that's going to happen tonight at UAS at the Egan Lecture Hall at 7 p.m., and it's going to be done by Dr. Charlene Weaving, who's in the studio with us right now. Dr. Weaving, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate you having here. Fascinating title, Powder Chicks, and then the subheadline of that is Examining Gender Construction and Risk in Extreme Skiing. So tell me a little bit about the basis of kind of the underlying story behind your research and then how you kind of developed it from there.
Right. Well, it is wonderful to be here. And so essentially what I'm going to be talking about tonight is looking at the story of Sarah Burke, who is a Canadian freestyle skier who unfortunately had a tragic accident in the superpipe and died. So I'll be talking about how the media portrayed her and examining what a really tremendous athlete she was in improving status for women in freestyle skiing and got slopestyle skiing into the upcoming Olympic Games in Sochi 2014. And then also looking how she was portrayed as a sexual object in the media.
So that's this interesting thing. There's kind of this duality to that. You're this extreme, amazing athlete at the height of your powers, but then you're also the sexual object. Now, how does that in your mind differ from, I mean, athletes in general, male and female, are beautiful, right? They're amazing physical specimens. They're, they're all those things. So you would think there's some objectification of of them, whether they're male or female. You find it different, though, with the female athletes in this sport.
Yeah. So what seems to happen with the female athletes, and there are images of male athletes scantily clad or shirtless type of thing, but it just so much more images of female athletes, and it's become so mainstream. It's in FHM magazines or Maxim magazines. Some women athletes pose nude in Playboy. It's online that we don't always realize how predominant it is. And I think when women athletes are positioned in these types of images, that it's trivializing their performance. Whereas with male athletes, we still view them to be strong and powerful athletes, and I don't think that their skill is trivialized as much as it is with women athletes when we objectify them.
So in the case that you were specifically looking at, what were the examples of where you could show that the accomplishments of this athlete were actually being trivialized by some of the ways that she was being promoted and being famous?
Right. So the classic example is in 2006, she was voted number 91 out of 100 in FHM for him magazine's top sexiest women. And in the images, she's posing kind of in this bikini or bra and panty set. And she's you wouldn't know she's a skier until you see two skis that are crossed in front of her, covering her breasts, and they don't have bindings on them. So it's not an active type of pose. And she later talked about how, unfortunately, as her career progressed, the first Google search of her, you come across those images.
Sure, yeah.
And that seems to be the case for many women athletes, is that you can't escape it. And a lot of them talk about regretting participating in such promos. But I think at times you feel like it's the only way to get some media attention. And with the case of Burke in Canada, unfortunately, a lot of people didn't even know who she was because she got such infrequent media attention. You know, there may have been one or two headlines about her in the paper when she won an X Game title or something like that. But there really wasn't a lot of coverage because it's not a mainstream sport. And there was so much more coverage after she died.
And the coverage she was getting was maybe more about this other part of what she was doing, the part. I mean, there's a part of that that's selling the brand and selling you as an athlete. And then I would think that athletes think, well, I'll do this thing, but then when I compete, I'll get more attention, more sponsorship, more of that kind of stuff.
Right. So I see that as a false sense of empowerment, and I don't think it actually trickles into more sponsorship.
Is that
or
right?
It's very limited.
Is
yeah.
that right? So what's why is that? You would think, here's this person, no matter what the pose or whatever, they're getting massive hits on Facebook or Google.
I think it's more short-lived. It's not increasing spectatorship or fans to actually watch the event. So I know in Canada, there's women's sports doesn't get a lot of spectators. And I know that's a bit different in terms of the U.S. with NCAA, that it's a bit of a different situation. But
it's definitely lower viewership. I mean, there's, you know, even in the sports that seem like they get a good amount of viewership, if you compare the men's sports to the women's sports in those areas, typically it's right. much higher for the men's sports.
And for our Canadian athletes, our Canadian female athletes, the types of sponsorships they tend to get, the classic example is Haley Wickenheiser, which is one of our top female hockey players. She got sponsored by Hamburger Helper. And so the commercial is her making dinner for her family and talking about how she's busy but always has time to make a healthy meal. Whereas, you know, the male equivalent of that, Sidney Crosby or Wayne Gretzky in the past, is, you know, with Gatorade or an actual hockey brand.
Doing what they're famous for.
So there seems to be this need to kind of portray women athletes in a certain way in order for us to accept them.
Yeah, interesting. They have to have this home life. They have to be able to perform in this other way for us to accept that they're great athletes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Really interesting. What's your background as far as your studies and stuff? How did you come upon this as something to study?
Well, I studied sexualization of women athletes throughout my PhD work. And then I've always been interested in looking at nature sports and extreme sports. And Dr. Kevin Krine over at UAS, we both attend the International Association for the Philosophy of Sport conference. So we met up and we started talking about this and We hope to pursue some future research projects together based on this idea of risk and gender.
It's interesting. What do you think? And what university are you associated
with? I'm at St. Francis Xavier in Nova Scotia.
Great. And what do you think this you're looking at a small segment of, you know, professional athletes. This one half of 1% of all the people who ski can go that way. What do you think it says about larger issues in society? What do you think that this is kind of? What's the important message to take away from some of these ideas?
Well, I think it's seeing in the presentation tonight. I'll be showing lots of examples of how women are portrayed in extreme culture, and I think the more we realize how pervasive the extent of sexism and the way we tend to view women athletes, that I think that just helps us to have a better understanding of how women are portrayed in other areas, not just in the super pipe, for example.
Yeah, right. And and in society at large.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to talk to you. I could just sit here and talk to you for another 45 minutes, but we've got other folks to get to. But once again, it's Powder Chicks is the name of the talk. It's Examining Gender Construction and Risk in Extreme Skiing, and Dr. Charlene Weaving is going to be presenting tonight at UAS at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's happening at 7 p.m., and thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Fascinating discussion with you.
Thank you.
And have a great talk tonight. I'm sure you'll get lots of people showing up.
Sounds
asking
good.
Lots of questions about it. Yes.
Thank you.
Yvonne asking for lawyers, guns, and money. But we've got a lawyer here, at least, here in the studio with us right now. Jeffrey Mittman is with me from the ACLU out of Anchorage. That's where your office
Anchorage,
is at Anchorage. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you represent the ACLU in Alaska. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
me.
And
you guys are having this really interesting thing, Saturday Gatherings, a once-yearly thing that's happening in over at the Wharf Ballroom in the hangar ballroom there. Happens once a year.
Once a year. We want to, we do them regularly up in Anchorage, and our friends down here said, wait a second, you guys need to be down here every year. So we'll be at the wharf from 11 to 12:30, and there are a few seats left, and we have our staff attorney down. We'll talk about some of the cases we're doing. We have one of our plaintiffs who just won a great case. She'll share her story. And then, of course, I'll talk about what's going on in the legislature, since there's a few bills we're keeping a very close eye on.
Do you focus specifically on Alaska issues, or do people want to talk about broader issues as well?
We can talk about broader issues as well. Obviously, the joy of being part of the ACLU is ACLU of Alaska focuses on things that are happening both here in Juneau and then around the state. But we also work closely with our national offices. People know there's a big Supreme Court case coming up next week. We can talk about that. Really, it's a chance for us to talk to our friends, answer questions, and really see what's on people's minds and make sure we're doing the right things here.
What would you say that the ACLU's mission is, especially in Alaska?
You know, it's really actually quite simple. The ACLU in Alaska and all the ACLUs, we have really just one job, and that's to preserve and expand constitutional rights and civil liberties that are guaranteed under the U.S. and Alaska constitutions. We do that through litigation. We do that through public education, and we do it through legislation. So it's a three-pronged approach to make sure that the government is not taking away any of our rights.
Can you give an example? I can think of a couple, but can you think of an example for me of a case that the ACLU has gotten involved in that people wouldn't typically associate with the ACLU getting involved with?
Yeah, sure. There's a few of them. I can tell you the first one.
What's the purpose? Why would the ACLU be involved in that case in that way? Yeah.
One of my very first cases, I've been here 5 years now. My very first case, I went down to Homer. There's a small religious group of Russian old believers. And they had Russian Holy Week was coming up, and the state wanted them to take a qualifying exam during the time when Holy Week was going to be scheduled. And they were trying to arrange for a different time, and nothing happened. And finally, they contacted the ACLU. And of course, they were a little afraid to contact us because everybody says, oh, the ACLU hates religion. It's like, no, we love the Constitution. The Constitution protects the right to be free from religion or to be able to practice it. So we contacted the state and said, listen, you've got to change the date of the exam. These people have the right to practice their religious beliefs, to celebrate Russian Holy Week. And we wrote the letter, and 3 days later, the state said, well, has nothing to do with the ACLU letter, but we arranged an alternate testing date.
No, so let's talk about that a little bit, the power of the ACLU. Talk about that a little bit. Yeah. What is that? What do you feel like that association and that power the ACLU has to represent things and to be an advocate for issues?
Right. You know, there are places in the country where the ACLU is very big and very powerful and has thousands of members. And then there's some place like Alaska where there's a lot of libertarian, there's a lot of privacy orientation, but there's a lot of misinformation. So people may not know who we are and what we do. So what we do as an organization is we're very careful. We focus on the facts. So when I write a letter of testimony to the legislature, it's not a policy letter. It's not telling them why they should do something. It's a legal review. And I say, listen, here's what the case law is. Here's what the Alaska Supreme Court says. Here's what the U.S. Supreme Court says. You can do what you want, but if you do the wrong thing, we can guarantee you we'll see you in court. And slowly but surely, we've built up a record of some really important wins. You know, every once in a while, things go the different way, and we try to be honest about that. Sometimes we say, we can't predict with certainty what a court will do, but this right is so important, we just can't let this be. And, you know, over the course of time, we've had some real good successes. Legislators or assembly members in boroughs will come back to us, and oftentimes we'll have a good sit-down. Cases people don't even hear about. Well, they'll change the rules, they'll adjust some language, they'll do some amendments. And oftentimes, before it even gets to court, we can just work cooperatively. And that's what we try to do.
You were mentioning that some of what you'll be talking about on Saturday is some of the things going on right now. What are some of the highlights of things that are happening right now in Alaska?
Yeah, so we all know that the Alaska Constitution that the delegates created back in the mid to late 50s up in Fairbanks is really recognized as one of the finest constitutions in the state. Unfortunately, finest constitutions in the country, exactly. Right now, the legislature is actually considering two bills, HJR 1, SJR 9. They want to amend the state constitution and say that we can take public funding, public tax dollars, and use that to fund private religious schools. We obviously think that's a big mistake. Again, while we would protect the right of anybody, like the Russian old believers, to practice their faith, we think religion is best when government stays out of it. So we're fighting those bills, and we've submitted testimony to the legislature and explained to them, you know, we have a great constitution. It's interesting. From the debate of the delegates, former Lieutenant Governor Coghill said, listen, I don't want the government involved in sectarian schools. And we're trying to remind Senator Coghill, who's a great guy, a very good friend, that, you know, your dad got it right. Let's leave the Constitution alone. So it's bills like that that we try to walk the halls and really see if we can convince them to do the right thing.
Have there been bills that have been, I mean, there was a lot of national attention even to the bill that was passed earlier in the legislative session by, I believe, the House. I don't know about it went to the Senate, but about the assault weapons. Are there things like that that the ACLU gets involved in, or is that an issue that's sort of separate from what you guys would normally?
What we try to focus on is there a right that the government is taking away from the people? So, for example, many of the bills that are going through now that have to do with what's the role of the federal government versus the state government, if it's something that's so clearly unconstitutional that it's essentially unenforceable, we're not going to worry about it.
How you view this one?
You may draw the conclusions you wish to draw,
okay.
But it's important that you know the ACLU be seen as not being disrespectful to any of our legislators. But you know what we really focus on is on occasion. You know, I've been in committees where an elected official might say, well, it may be unconstitutional, but we're going to pass it anyway and see what the courts do. And we try to avoid that. We really try to provide good information. Push comes to shove, you know, worst case scenario, we do go to court. And
I mean, I guess
really
from an uncynical, if you were to take an uncynical standpoint, that can be the role of the courts and the legislature. The legislature could pass something and say, well, we think this is a good idea. Whether or not it stands up in court is another. That's the
exactly,
checks and balances.
Exactly. That's the checks and balances. Yeah. And the system works. And I have to say, we are blessed with a really phenomenally strong, very good bench here in the state of Alaska, as we know from the Missouri system, where we get really the best legal minds end up on the courts. And we often get very, very good decisions that are looked to by other courts.
That's an interesting point. Do you feel like Alaska is looked to with respect from other states as a leader in certain areas? Do you think do we end up in a lot of muddles here that other people are? How is the state viewed in a legal perspective nationally?
You know, one thing we can be proud of, for example, back in the 70s, we added to our state constitution an explicit privacy clause, and there's some states that did that. And that really is, I think, something Alaskans are very proud of. We recognize that government has a limited role, and that the right to privacy, the right to be let alone, to the right to make decisions for yourself is very important. And that's been very crucial. For example, a bill that's in the legislature right now, SB 49, seeking to restrict a woman's right to have the opportunity to discuss with her healthcare provider what is her best medical decision. And, you know, again, we follow the Constitution, and we're fighting that one. And the Alaska Supreme Court has looked at that right to privacy and has said, you know what? The Alaska voters are clear. They want government to stay out of people's business. So we make slow and steady progress, and I think that's something we're all proud of.
Well, part of a fascinating discussion, all part of what is going to be happening on Saturday. Tell folks the time again.
Again, we're down at the Hangar Wharf Ballroom from 11 to 12:30 on Saturday. Give you a phone number, 907-263-2003, or just Google ACLU of Alaska, and that'll give you contact information. But we'll look forward to seeing everybody down there this Saturday.
Sounds great. Saturday gatherings with the ACLU in Alaska. It's happening at the Wharf Ballroom.
Thanks.
Right now, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 21st of March, 2013. It's the birthday of the poet Nizar Kabbani, born in Damascus, 1923. His mother was illiterate, sold her jewelry to raise money to publish his first collection, Childhood of a Bosom, 1948. He went on to become the most popular poet writing in Arabic and to publish more than 20 books of poetry, much of it influenced by the tragic deaths of two women he loved. His older sister, who, when he was 15, committed suicide rather than be forced into marriage with a man she did not love. And many years later, in 1981, his second wife, an Iraqi woman, died during the Lebanese Civil War when the Iraqi embassy was bombed. Kabbani was grief-stricken at the loss of his wife, frustrated with the political and cultural climate of the Arab world, and he lived in Europe for the rest of his life. Nizar Kabbani, who wrote, "I knew when I said I love you that I was inventing a new alphabet for a city where no one could read, that I was saying my poems in an empty theater and pouring my wine for those who could not taste it." It was on this day in 1965 that Martin Luther King Jr. led the Civil Rights March from Selma, Alabama, to Montgomery, to protest the fact that black voters could not vote in Alabama. They had attempted the march twice before earlier in the month. The first time they'd been badly beaten by state troopers. The second time they were ordered to turn back. And this time, under court order, they were allowed to proceed. And by the time they reached the state capitol in Montgomery, there were 25,000 marchers. It's the birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach, born in Eisenach, Germany, 1685. Came from a musical family. As a teenager, he was an accomplished organist. He worked in various churches, but he could be difficult to get along with. In one post, he criticized the choir, took prolonged absences from his job, and once he got in a fight with a bassoonist and called the bassoonist something you could translate as a bassoonist breaking wind after eating a green onion. He took a leave of absence from his job in the town of Arnstadt so he could go to visit the composer Dietrich Buxtehude, who liked Bach, and Bach could have taken over Buxtehude's position, but by tradition he would have had to marry Buxtehude's daughter, and he decided not to do that and went back to Arnstadt, where the church council held a meeting and complained that Bach was accompanying the hymns with surprising variations and irrelevant ornaments, which obliterate the melody and confuse the congregation. And not much later, he left Arnstadt, went on to Leipzig, and a distinguished career as a composer and organist and a great champion of German and sacred music. Here's a poem for today by Tom Clark, Every Day. Awake, the mind's hopeless, so at 5:45 I rise and run 2 or 3 miles in the pristine air of a dark and windy winter morning with a light rain falling and no sound but the pad of my sneakers on the asphalt and the calls of the owls in the cypress trees on Mesa Road. And when I get back, you're still asleep under the warm covers because love is here to stay. It's another day, and we're both still alive. Every Day, a poem by Tom Clark from his collection Light and Shade, published by Coffee House Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Join us March 28th for a night in Madrid at the Zephyr Restaurant, an exclusive evening featuring a 5-course gourmet dinner with cuisine from throughout Spain.
Also, flamenco dancing and live music, and we might break some more plates because it's Andy's birthday.
It's your birthday. We're gonna party.
So join us for a night in Madrid, March 28th at 6 o'clock at the Zephyr Restaurant. Get your tickets online at ktoo.org.
Hope to see a whole bunch of you there, night in Madrid. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, on a day like today, when it's cold out, summer seems a long way away, but it's not too far out to start thinking about what's going to happen with those kids. And a Juno Fine Arts Camp is starting June 3rd. It's going to go through the 28th. M.K. McNaughton is here to talk about that. But M.K., we wear a number of hats, like many of us in this community, and you have another thing you wanted to mention real quickly before we talk about the Fine Arts Camp.
I do. Thank you, Andy.
Sure.
I have 2 part-time jobs now. One of them is the executive director of the Alaska Arts Education Consortium, which is largely about professional development for teachers, teaching teachers to incorporate the arts into the classroom. And it's also working with school administrators and school board members to support that effort. And we are hosting a symposium Friday, tomorrow, noon to 5 at the Baranoff. There's lunch and a keynote speaker, a woman named Denise Grande from Los Angeles, who's working with 81 school districts. And if she can do that, we can.
Wow.
Think of what we can do.
Amazing.
She's really inspiring. So she's here to open and to lead through several different conversations.
And should people just show up, or do they need to register, or how do they?
Both. You can register online, or you can just show up. And you can learn more about it on our website. You can Google Alaska Arts Education Consortium, and we'll pop up. Or if you want the direct link, it's akarts.org.
akarts.org, and
yep.
Find out all about the symposium happening tomorrow if it's right for you, if it's something you're interested in. Starts at noon tomorrow. But the Fine Arts Camp, let's talk about that. This is
that's my
something,
other part-time
boy,
job.
My daughter loved the Fine Arts Camp, even got to be a counselor at the Fine Arts mm-hmm. Camp for a few years, and it's such a great opportunity for the kids in this town to just make art part of their everyday during summer.
It is. I'm very honored to be a part of it. This summer, when I moved to town almost 25 years ago, one of my first teaching art artist jobs was working at Fine Arts Camp, and it was a great experience for me as an emerging art teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I signed up to help organize it this year because I believe in offering high-quality classes for kids. So I was really looking for fabulous teachers who really care about kids, who teach really interesting, high-quality arts. And I'm excited about the lineup. We have...
I was looking at this. It's so fun just to look at all the... Just the names of the classes. Jewelry and flair, right? And spoken word, clowning, and knitting, and curious constructions, and cooking, and the art of movement. All kinds of really interesting stuff.
I feel great about every single teacher, and it's... Fine Arts Camp has changed over the years, so people might be confused about who can attend. And this year, it's for entering kindergarten through entering sixth grade, so kids who are entering those grades next year.
Okay.
So, and the kids are broken out into three groups, K-1s, and they rotate, and then they have choices. And this year, for the first time ever, Juno Fine Arts Camp is... You can sign up online.
Hey.
In the old days,
the intranets.
There were lines and you had to,
it's a series of tubes. We use it to sign up for things now. Yes.
Elbow-free registration.
And that's at junodance.org?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, because Fine Arts Camp is run through Juno Dance Unlimited.
Right.
So you can look online now. They have a Fine Arts Camp page, and there's a little info about it and a great picture that was created by a student I used to work with, a block print, a beautiful print. And April 1st, registration goes live, and it's first come, first serve. So the classes all cap at 15 students.
Okay.
And I asked the teachers, some are returning teachers and some are new, and I believe as an arts organizer that teachers teach what they know best. So rather than me telling people this is what I want you to teach, I try to find out, what do you like to teach? What have you had success with?
Sure.
And here's my favorite description. They're all fabulous classes, but I love what Anne Furlato wrote about science and art. Have you ever noticed the space between clouds? Do you know how to use gravity to make interesting lines? Discover the art and science by observing weather, plants, and forces of nature. And I
like that, but I also like sock creatures and the next one, and weaving with hula hoops. And that's Ariel Lyon, who's a wonderfully young woman in town here who's going to be, that's going to be so much fun for people who, to interact, for kids to interact with these really fun people. Giselle Stone, another friend of mine who does wonderful work and is so terrific with kids. And that's really such a great thing about the Fine Arts Camp, how much kids just light up and sort of realize that there's creativity to be had all around them.
Yeah, I'm just nodding away here.
Yes, yes.
I agree. Yeah, they're great teachers. Sarah Campin is coming in. She grew up in Sitka, lives in Gustavus now, and we had so many ideas, we had to distill them down, but she's really physical movement, performing artist, and also visual artist. So she's teaching puppetry in the morning and clowning in the afternoons.
Fun.
So we have a morning session and an afternoon session. And you can sign up for a week at a time.
Okay.
And that's different, too. Different years, they've required that you sign up for the whole month or for 3 weeks. And this year, it's 1 week at a time because that's what works for Juno families, I think.
Right. And then you can sign up for just the morning session or just the afternoon session or for the full day.
Correct. Yeah. Or for the full day. And you can't just pick one class, though, because there had to be a limit in the chaos of... of organizing. And the classes are first come, first serve. So if you want to look through, there are at least three choices for every hour.
You can also, I was just going to say, you can also additionally, the camp starts at 9, but if you want some pre-camp care, if that works out better with your schedule, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, there's some pre-camp care you can also sign up for, which is like, I remember having to drop the kids off and all that. It's a great thing if you can get to work at 8, for sure. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And, it's actually really cheap. I hear people, you know, working in the arts now for 20 years, I hear people talking about art things being expensive, and really it's not compared to sports and to renting the ice skating rink or other things that people we don't blink at. But the arts are undervalued, and it's a deductible, tax deductible childcare expense if you're working
during
the time.
And it's a lifelong investment.
It is.
Because
it's just
creating,
fun. Yeah.
Creating creative people who will be our next great artists and the people that we're so proud to have a part of Juno. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting. JunoDance.org is the place to go. The online registration starts April 1st, but you can look already at everything that's already online. You can check out the classes and check out the teachers and all that stuff.
There's a little PDF version of the program.
You can see what times and all that kind of stuff is. It works for you. And you can sign up once again for morning or afternoon or the full day and some pre-camp care and all that stuff. It's the Juno Fine Arts Camp. It's such a great thing, and it's run by Juno Dance Unlimited, and you can go to junodance.org to find out more information. MK, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Telling us all about it.
Yeah.
And have a happy camp. I'm sure maybe we'll talk to you before camp starts one more time to get
that
people to.
Great.
Yeah, we'll do that too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Andy.
Yes. Well, coming up next, we have an early edition of Arts Up because we're going to make a call to Tracy Helming for a Juno Jazz and Classics workshop in a little bit. But Nancy DeCherney's with us right now. Nancy, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. And here we are in spring.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, it's gorgeous out.
It's gorgeous
but
out.
But it is
yes.
a little cold.
Well, just talking with MK reminded me that scholarship applications for fine arts camps and whatnot like that are due April 1st. And
yes,
so
okay.
if you have a child who you would like to send to camp and you're a little uncertain as to whether you can afford it or not, go ahead and have the kid apply for a scholarship from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Well, that's a great tip. So once again, the registration for the actual Fine Arts Camp starts April 1st, but the deadline to get in an application for scholarships and for help with sending kids is April 1st. So get that ready in this week.
And that's an online deal, too. So, and there'll be a little audition. But anyway, you can check the website out for more information about that.
JAHC.org is where you can go. Yeah. Okay. So
all
what's
right.
going on
so it's a kind
this
of a,
week?
Well, we have three different...
Let's just stop. Hold on. Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Woohoo!
Can we just say hello? Right?
That was quite a deal. That was quite a deal.
And
you know, I want to really thank the gold medal basketball people and community schools. They have never before allowed us to have a concert at the same time, and I think it worked beautifully.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was possible, but
there you go.
Yeah.
Everybody had a great time.
Parking was at a premium, we'll just say that.
It always
is. Hey.
When is it not at a premium? If you don't get the one right at the front door, it's a bad deal.
Park at Cope Park and just walk your way down.
Yes.
No problem.
Exercise is good for you.
Okay,
so we still do have gold medal basketball going on because it's still spring break. Also, we have a whole bunch of theater going on. There's Perseverance Theater with Seminar, which you know well because you did the music. This is a funny performance. If you want something to chuckle at, this is the one for you. There's Equivocation Theater, and The Rough is doing that, and I haven't been able to see it yet, so I can't
That's
speak.
One of those ones.
See?
That, see
I'm going to miss
it's
it.
It's getting down to it. We've got to get out to that one.
This is your weekend, I think.
Yeah.
And then there is also the Keep Coming Back, which Generator Theater is doing over at Rockwell, and you only have this weekend.
Yeah,
so,
and that's Ryan and Sarah Conroe kind of collaborating on that with a bunch of other people.
So that's your theater. We have the Third Thursday Family Night tonight out at the Valley Library. That's for free. We have Powder Chicks examining gender construction
and risk. We just
talked
to Dr. Weaving about that earlier.
Okay. Yep. There's Salsa Dancing at the Rec Center. We have Juno Explorers. They're going to be going over to the City Museum and talking about rattles, totems, dancing, and singing. This is for kids ages 8 to 12.
Cool.
Stuff to do.
Sounds loud.
I like that.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Yeah, they all came by our gallery earlier in the week and had a very nice time, I believe. So let's see. There's the school kids art, I think, is out at the Nugget Mall this weekend. There's Friday after school art at the art department and also Kids Time Art Academy. The 34th All Alaska Juried Art Exhibition opens on Friday at the State Museum.
Oh, okay.
This is a big event.
Yeah.
So do try to get over to that. Rotaract's annual Chili Off.
That's always a big deal.
That's always a big deal. That's at Twisted Fish. It's at 6 p.m. on Friday. And it's a fundraiser for the Rotaract people. I think it's for the boxes or the shelters.
Always, that's what it's been. The box, Shelters in a Box is the name of the organization that has these boxes that they send to areas that are have been struck with disaster. And it gets people up and running and allows them to live in some semblance of shelter. In just a small box.
So, and then y'all get to have good chili.
Yeah.
At 6:30 is a lecture by Anchorage artist James Belkey. That's at the State Museum, probably part of this juried thing. Out at 6:30 and 8 p.m., the Forest Service Fireside Chat is Golden Girls, the Peterson Sisters Make History. And let's see, we got Contra and Square Dancing with live music by the Bevels at St. Anne's Parish Hall on Friday at 7:30. And at 10 p.m. at the Alaskan, it's Harrison B. and the Devil's Club Live.
Oh, nice.
So it's a nice Friday.
Yeah, good little Friday.
Good little Friday. You got too many theater things to do and too much dancing to do and, you know, what the heck. Saturday, you've got the KTOO used record CD and video sale, the media sale.
Is the media sale. This is the, you know when that's happening, pledge drives around the corner. That's the precursor to pledge. It's the harbinger of pledge drive.
All right, so you could get your pledges in now perhaps get that.
We will have pledge forms available for you at the door.
Are you guys doing quiet drives and stuff like
we
that?
We do. Quiet drive is underway.
Make it, shorten it. So
KTOO.org. Go there right now and make your quiet drive contribution.
At 10 a.m. on Saturday, Ready, Willing, and Able, Simpson Carver and metalsmith Abel Ryan will be demonstrating over at the Alaska State Museum.
Oh, that's a fascinating thing, to be able to actually watch a carver work like that would be wonderful,
Now, here it says that Sarah Asper Smith is up at the City Museum doing storytelling and digital illustration, although
that
I have this feeling that was
weekend.
Last.
That was last weekend.
Yeah, let's take that
one out. I don't think she booked again.
Yeah, we just forgot to delete that one.
I'm sure that was one. I'd missed it, but I'm sure that was a wonderful presentation, but
we could see get your photos with the Easter Bunny at the Nugget Mall,
and also, always fun.
Yes, and on top of that, they're having the Raptor Center open house at the Nugget Mall, and I fear for the bunnies.
Yeah, this is not a good combination. Who thought about this? Number, I fear for the raptors too. They're just going to look. That's the biggest bunny I've ever seen. Oh my god!
I bet if two of us paled up here,
sharpen your talons.
So there'll be some lively times at Nugget Mall over the weekend. 6 p.m., it's the Girl Scout annual auction and fundraising event to support Girl Scouts in Southeast. That's always a fun time. That's at the Jack. It's $30, and it's a 21-plus. Let's see, at 10 p.m., Miss Tess and the Talkbacks at the Rendezvous.
Okay.
They look pretty fun.
All right.
Barn dance is on Saturday.
Barn dance is on Saturday, not Friday, Jeff says.
Okay, so we've got to move that around
All right.
Okay.
Update the calendar, folks. It is a good point to make. Let's make this a little quick point. The community calendar is something that's entered and updated by people, right? By real people. So if you've moved your event, you got to go in there and update the calendar.
Well, let us know, because we actually have two folks over there doing that.
Okay, so let the
calendar genies or whatever over there.
Let the Jack know if the calendar at the Jack is not accurately reflecting what you're doing, because it also gets replicated. You know, that's the calendar that we use at KTOO.org as well, and so it's everywhere.
It spreads.
It's everywhere.
Okay, now Sunday there's something really interesting happening. The Eastern Oregon University is coming up to do a big performance, and they're doing scholarship auditions for their program. There's a woman who is a Junoite who goes to that university and is part of their choir. And so they're up here looking for folks who might want to go to that university. And they're going to be offering at 4 o'clock Eastern Oregon University Music Department Totally 80s Rewind. And this is a fundraiser for the Alaska King Island Christmas folks that are going to go over to Scotland.
All right.
The lineup
good.
Looked good. If you're an 80s music sort of person, this is for you. So Monday is Seward's Day, and there is a pancake breakfast over at the Senior Center.
Okay.
That's at 9 a.m.
Nice.
At 5 p.m., it's the Arts Roundtable. We'll be talking about clustering, and we'll be talking about how to enter the gallery. If you would like to apply for a gallery exhibit or a juried art exhibit with us, we'll be talking about how to do that, because it's an online deal. So that's at 5 p.m. on Monday. On Tuesday, we have Big Bang for Beginners. This is a presentation at the Murray Drake Planetarium by Steve Kotas at 6:30. And there's the first International Fly Fishing Film Festival.
All right. Well, that's a
whole bunch of stuff.
Full weekend of stuff. It doesn't have to be a first Friday to have a busy weekend in the arts. No.
Alaska Design Forum is bringing Plasma Studio, and I went online and looked at their stuff. It's amazing stuff.
Okay, when's that happening?
It's on Wednesday at 6 p.m. also at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's really nice that the Design Forum brings these people. It's very inspirational. Speaking of that.
By the way, let's talk about it just for a minute. That Design Forum, it needs to be sellouts because these are internationally recognized, amazing people.
Award-winning. Yeah. These people are building stuff in China and Japan and Australia.
An incredible billion-dollar project. Yes, amazing stuff. And once again, that's 6 p.m. at the Goldtown Nickelodeon on Wednesday. Look, you got time to plan.
Yes, I do have. Noon, there's a Juno Choose Respect March on Thursday. Start on the Capitol steps. We also have on Thursday the last of the Inspiring Public Art Network. We're going to look at the year in review for 2012, the selections for the best public art all over the country. There is a drum clinic and open jam with Cole Paramore on Thursday at 6 p.m.
And we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that next week because we're on to next Thursday.
Well, Thursday comes as fast as
it does.
Can.
It does.
There's a documentary at the Goldtown as well, and I don't know how they're going to do this if they have both the Design Forum and this play or film at the same time.
Maybe the documentary
time.
We'll figure it out. Anyway, Design Forum Wednesday. It's going to happen. Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's really great. I would recommend that too. And all the stuff that you just mentioned. It's going to be a wonderful week in the arts.
And there are, like I said, all these deadlines coming up for scholarship applications, for gallery exhibits, for individual artist grants, just a whole lot of things. So suddenly it's spring and suddenly there's deadlines. What
and
can I say about that?
JAHC.org is a place to go. And if you have any questions, email JAHC.org there and they will answer them for you. Nancy DeCherney from the Junior Arts and Humanities Council. Thanks so much for coming in.
I'll see you next week.
Okay. Welcome back to a Juno afternoon. Beautiful day out there. It's colder than it looks, though. You look outside, it seems like it's going to be warm, but it's cold. Jesslyn Rentella is joining us right now from Juno Jazz and Classics. And on the phone is Tracy Helming, who's going to be teaching the annual string workshop for Juno Jazz and Classics. I hear some dogs in the background there, Tracy.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the backyard. It's a little warmer here in Seattle, so I don't have to grab my boots.
It is a little cold. It's supposed to warm up, but maybe a little bit of snow and rain. We don't know. We're going to see what happens. A perfect time to go inside and learn more about your stringed instrument. So tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish during the string workshop.
Okay. Well, I'm coming up to teach violin, and My number one goal whenever I teach workshops like this is to inspire students to show them how much fun violin is and to make the learning process a joy. Sometimes it's a game, sometimes it's an adventure, sometimes it's filled with stories, but to give them the boost of inspiration to keep them practicing happily for the next month, 6 months, year.
And these workshops are kind of open to all ages and all levels. So that, I mean, that must be a challenge as a teacher, right? You've got all kinds of people in there who, you know, who are just kind of all over the map, I'm sure.
Right. Actually, that's what I love, because everybody's, you know, at a different position in their journey learning music. And it's just like building a house. You have to lay certain foundations first before you can do other things. And I really enjoy looking at a student and hearing them play and trying to figure out what will give them the most important tool so that they can accomplish something new and get a higher level of ease in their playing.
So you're a Suzuki violin teacher. Tell me a little bit about that method and what that's all about.
Well, the Suzuki method, it's both a method and a philosophy. The philosophy is that all children can learn to play a musical instrument really well. And the method is based on the way we learn to speak a language. Dr. Suzuki woke up one day and thought, wow, it's amazing that Japanese language is such a difficult language to speak, people say, and yet everybody can speak Japanese beautifully. And he thought, isn't music the same? Can it be taught in the same way that we learn a language? I was not raised as a Suzuki child, so I learned by reading music off a page. I didn't have recordings to listen to. The Suzuki method has parents come to the lesson with their children. At the lesson, the teacher will try to stick to one or two basic points about how to make violin playing easier, how to help tone production. And the parent takes notes. They go home, and they'll practice with their child every day. So they become a home teacher.
Hopefully, yes,
in a beautiful day, in a beautiful world. Theoretically speaking, and I'm a parent, so I can tell you I know all about the theoretical side of this. at the same time that they're practicing with their child, they'll also be playing recordings and creating an environment where the child is hearing the pieces over and over and over again, so that they're learning more by ear than by reading music, especially at the beginning. Now, I also have to say, of course, you do learn to read music using this Suzuki method. It's just that by learning by ear at first, your attention is not drawn to a piece of paper with black things all over it. Your attention is drawn to the sound that you're making, the feeling in your muscles, and how you're holding your violin and your position.
So just the same way we learn to speak before we learn to write a language, it's the same.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And once you learn to say mama, and you say it a few times, you don't stop saying it because you learned how to say daddy or candy bar. You keep saying mama, and you say, daddy, can I have a candy bar? You start putting things together in sentences. And similarly, in the Suzuki method, we review pieces. So you don't just learn a piece and then forget it. You keep, you retain it in what grows to be a really vast body of literature and a repertoire that you can play. And each piece contains a tool that helps you play the next piece with greater ease and greater expertise.
Great. Well, the weekend will go Saturday and Sunday. There's workshops, and then there'll be a recital that sort of for the public and that kind of thing at the end?
Yep. And there are group classes. So children, because they're all learning the same body of repertoire, they have the added perk that they can play together. They don't have to rehearse together for months to make it happen. So we have group classes where we play the pieces. We have fun little violin games and gives the children a chance to enjoy a community of music.
Jesslyn, how can people sign up and participate in this?
Well, since it is coming up this weekend, I want to emphasize that we do have room, and we do want to sign more folks up if you are a violin student or if you have a young violin student. So you can give me a call at the office, which is 463-3378. You can also visit our website, which is jazzandclassics.org. There's a registration form, but most importantly, there's the full schedule, so you can take a look at our action-packed weekend. Figure out what master classes or group classes you might be interested in, and then either give me a call, 463-3378, or send an email to info@jazzandclassics.org.
And one of lots of things that are going on at Jazz and Classics, right? Other workshops and things like that in the works as well?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this, this, like I said, is one crazy action-packed weekend. We are just booked Saturday through Sunday, and we have that culminating recital is at 4 o'clock on Sunday. And then, of course, we are spooling up for the annual festival, May 3rd through 18th, kicking off with Arlo Guthrie. Just have to get that in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So. You have to get that in there. It's exciting. Everyone's talking about it.
I hope so. Yeah. We're selling tickets as we speak. So that website, jazzandclassics.org, go check out everything we have going on. So many artists, so many great artists, so many great events.
Yeah, so many great things happening because of jazzandclassics.org, and go there and get tickets. So Tracy, thanks so much for letting us talk to you for a little bit here. We'll see you in town on Saturday and Sunday as you teach the annual string workshop. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Tracy. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tracy, and thanks, Jesslyn, for coming by, letting us know not only about this, but all the cool stuff Jazz and Classics is up to.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. Talk to you soon. That's it for Juno Afternoon today. Hope you had a great day, and thanks to all my guests for coming in and calling in and letting us know all this great stuff that's happening in Juno. Hope you have a great Thursday. Get out there, enjoy the sun, bundle up, and as the forecast said, it's partly cloudy today and tonight, but increasing clouds for tomorrow. Coming up next, headlines from NPR and All Things Considered.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein.